Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world. So welcome to the 553rd edition of SDG. And the title of this message is 2022 Endgame Update Number 17. Now, after we cover all the news that you'll never hear on the legacy media, we're going to tie it all into the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy world with regard to the soon return of Jesus. Now, all Christians believe that Jesus will return, but there's where the agreement ends, folks, and the confusion begins. And most of the confusion surrounds his thousand-year rule and reign here on earth. The amillennialists, as they're called, deny any earthly rule of Jesus, whereas the premillennialists say he returns before, and the posts say Jesus returns after the millennium. So I hope you stay tuned to learn about the millennium, the tribulation, and the rapture. But the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. We're just God's people passing through. So let's all refuse. Let's absolutely stand up and say no to what these Luciferians are doing as they wage all-out war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which, like I say, are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, how did it all start? It all started with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, as we do every week, let's review something from last week's episode. Now, last week we covered Event 202. You know, it's the, what do you want to call it? The globalist dress rehearsal to the next scamdemic. Remember, we had Event 201 back in October or November of 2019, right before the coronavirus heist was unleashed upon the world. And now we've got monkeypox, smallpox, whatever you want to call it, folks. And Germany hosted Event 202. Now, this week, I was really excited. I thought I was starting to see some traction being gained by the alt media. And this article appeared on the New Atlantean Substack page, and it was first posted on the internet by the Burning Platform website. And it was titled Event 202, What Are Smallpox Pandemic Simulations Foreshadowing? Now, it's very interesting to look into all of this information. And when you start to realize what's happening here, you can see that this isn't an accident. This is a scam, folks, a scam beyond anything that we could even imagine. And that's it. They're scamming us, Paul.
What?
That's right. I was wondering where you were. I thought for sure you'd be outraged by that. But it's a wonder, folks, to me that more folks aren't talking about it. Now, what you can dig into is you can find this official document created from the NTI back on March 2021 predicting a monkeypox pandemic starting on May 15th, 2022.
What? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
Yeah, the document was titled Strengthening Global Systems to Prevent and Respond to high-consequence biological threats. And on page 12 of this 36-page document, you can see they have three moves. Move one, move two, and move three. And in scenario one, they call move one monkeypox outbreak in, I can't read it. It's The pixelation is pretty poor on this screen capture I have here, folks. But they have these three scenarios, and if I tried to read this, it would be absurd. And the first attack in Move 1 was scheduled for May 15th, 2022. Now, they have Move 2 happening on June 10th, 2023. I'm sorry, January 10th. And then Move 3 kicks in next May 10th. You gotta wonder, don't you, folks? So for many years, I've heard insiders referring to the bloody climax of the fourth turning. Now, we've covered the fourth turning here on that show, but I never really knew what they meant. And I suspect they didn't know the specifics either. Now, we all knew that it would get bloodier and bloodier and, you know, more encompassing. And I think we see that in the craziness of this world right now. But I could never have envisioned what I'm actually seeing right now. The devastation from this, with all these bio attacks and these deadly jabs, it's going to be bigger in terms of fatalities than both world wars put together. And then we got the wars and rumors of wars and the threats of being nuked. Put that all on top. I'm telling you, folks, it's all governments against all people simultaneously. And as we get into the show, you're going to see why. These secular humanists are so convinced that they can change the natural law, so convinced that they could change what C.S. Lewis called the Tao, that they have the audacity to think that all they need to do is gain absolute and total control, and we're going to be living in a utopia. But we know that's not true. Now, I never thought they'd be able to get enough police and military to turn on the nation's own peoples. And that's probably true. But I never thought we would see this blatant zombie-like compliance. I mean, look at the 55-year-old woman at the grocery store ringing you up, you know? People like her have been brain-numbed and are now doing their bidding. And I never thought all these mothers would line up their children to get the jab and sacrifice them at the altar of Baal. And that's exactly what's opening. Happening, folks. It's all mind-blowing. You know, yesterday I saw a pregnant woman wearing a mask in the store, and I wanted to tell her that she was actually harming herself and her baby and take it off. I mean, there's so many mask studies coming out now, but I didn't. I didn't say a thing. And I was just wondering whether you would have or not. But, you know, I can go on and just pontificate and ramble, but that's not the purpose of this show completely. What it is all about is sharing the forbidden news so that you folks can be aware. So right now, it's time to get started with Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist. It is, folks. It's nothing but lies and mind control. Now, we've been talking on this show about Dr. Michael Yeadon for a long time, 2 years plus. You know, he's a chief scientist at Pfizer, and he was also a VP at Pfizer, I think, in some drug discovery research endeavor. And he's been doing this for over 20 years. And like I said, we've covered him on and off for the last 2 years, maybe even longer. And what I was so excited about is that Greg Hunter on USAWatchdog.com finally had Dr. Yeadon on, and it was a bombshell interview. And I took about the first 10 or 11 minutes, and I just wanted you to hear the tone. I'm telling you, Dr. Michael Yeadon is out there sounding the alarm. And I encourage you to go to USAWatchdog.com and listen to this, but if you don't have the time, here's the first 10 minutes and 45 seconds.
Hi, I'm Greg Hunter. Welcome to USAWatchdog.com. Today, a special guest, a new guest, but it seems like an old guest. And the reason why is because I've been quoting this person from the very beginning. And from the very beginning of these CV-19 shots, you know, I came out and said, hey, it's experimental. Wait, wait. And then one of the other things that came out early on, and this was my source, this source who was a 20-year executive at one of the big drug companies, Pfizer, he was a chief science officer. He went on to have another company. He also is an expert in pulmonary, respiratory. He's an expert in vaccines, all this immunology. He's an expert, and he came out and said that he thought that this would be a way for the New World Order people, the globalists, to depopulate, he thought. Then later, back at the end of last year, 2021, he said, no, it's real. Depopulation. And why am I giving you this big buildup? Because this is not some tinfoil hat-wearing kid in his basement. This is a former executive. And who is it? It is Michael Yeadon, PhD, former Pfizer executive for 20 years. Dr. Yeadon, thank you for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Greg, thank you very much for hosting me. And as I say to you and anyone watching, if it weren't for platforms like you and the way you professionally front it up and have people watch, I might as well just be shouting in the dark. So thank you for being there and providing a conduit to other people.
Let's talk about this depopulation thing. You have come to the conclusion in all your experience and all the things that you know in the background, how long it takes to get stuff to come to market, that these shots, these CV-19 quote-unquote vaccines, injections, they are depopulation. Please explain.
Sure. It'll take a little while, but in brief, as you say, it became either was obvious quite early on that we were being lied to. So I'm a longtime British scientist. I had my university training in the same kind of places, same era as, say, the government, UK government's chief scientific advisor, a guy called Sir Patrick Vallance. So I actually worked in the neighboring laboratory to Pat when he was just an MD in the late 80s, early 90s. So with that background, I would say foundationally, we're both biologists. He would have had the same foundation courses I would have had in microbiology, virology, immunology, biochemistry. He would have had the same set textbooks from the universities because, you don't have 10 textbooks. So I will say if you want to look at immunology in British universities, you would always have a book called Essential Immunology by Ivan Roy. Every biologist goes and buys a copy because it covers the basics. So long and short is Sir Patrick Vallance and I know the same fundamental things. So when he was telling us things like, oh, we need to lock down because this is very dangerous new virus, SARS-CoV-2, or we need you to lock down to avoid transmission. I knew he was just lying. It's not a mistake. He's a clever guy, but he said things that I knew weren't true. For example, the real-world experiment on the cruise liner Diamond Princess was running in the background, I think in the first quarter of 2020. So we knew before they locked the UK down, they already knew roughly the lethality was in the order of a nasty seasonal influenza. So what do we normally do, Greg, in response to a seasonal influenza? The answer is, other than providing vaccines to those who want them, nothing. So I would say even if it was 3 times worse or 10 times worse, you wouldn't smash society for an episodic event that's of a kind that we've seen before. So we were being lied to about exaggeration. If you haven't seen it, I recommend that we put it out maybe in the show notes. I've written a document called 12 COVID Lies, where every major narrative point about the virus, how it threatens you, what you have to do to escape it, lockdowns and so on, masking, and everything about the vaccines, their safety and effectiveness. Everything is a lie. Seriously, it's shocking to me. It's a psychological operation. I'm stunned to this day that people, and I wonder what will happen if they read my short document, would the penny drop when you see everything you're being told is a lie? Anyway, so that was the backdrop. Why would, and it wasn't just UK, 23rd of March 2020, Prime Minister said, you must stay at home. This is completely without precedent, the idea that you would quarantine the healthy in order to stop a contagion, an infectious disease moving through communities completely without precedent. Why? Because we've known for millennia that it's people who have got an organism, a pathogen, and are symptomatic. Those are the people that are a potent source of infection. And there's no exception here. They lied to us about asymptomatic transmission. It's a fairy story. It's so infrequent as to be irrelevant. And as a consequence, when you're symptomatic, you don't feel well. When you don't feel well, you tend to stay at home or even in bed or hospital. So people who are symptomatic, good sources of infection, were the very people who deselected their interactions out in the community, just automatically. And that always happens. So as a result, transmission occurs only in internal spaces like the home, where a sick individual and someone who's susceptible will interact to some level. So hospitals, patients and nursing staff and doctors, home, people you live with, and so assisted living facilities, old age care homes, again, the resident and the people who would feed and wash them and so on. So most of the transmission did not happen in the community, but in these enclosed spaces. And so guess what? When you shut down society, close the businesses, nothing happens. It doesn't affect transmission at all. And I knew it wouldn't. It was obvious it wouldn't. That's what all the literature that was present, including, I may add, a mega review of over 100 pages by scientists who work for the WHO. They had reviewed all the non-pharmaceutical interventions, the so-called NPIs. They'd reviewed all of them in the second half of 2019. Conclusion, none of it works. The only precaution worth listening to is if you are sick, stay home. That's the only precaution. No mass screening of the healthy, no masks, no lockdowns of the healthy, no border control measures, whatever. So I noticed early on a gentleman I slightly knew because I'd worked with him 30 years earlier, the chief scientific advisor of the UK government, Pat Vallance, was lying on the telly. And then it wasn't just Britain that did these absurd things. Then, you know, it was also Italy slightly before, then France and Germany, Belgium, Portugal, Spain, and then bits of the US as well, most of the US. So imagine my horror. I knew that we were being lied to, and the most appalling thing was happening. We were being told essentially to stay home. Now, I'm not a macroeconomist, but I've been around long enough to know that if you shut down people's ability to make a living and instead just print the money and give it to them, you will blow up the currency. You will definitely cause inflation, potentially hyperinflation. You will break confidence internationally in all of the sovereign currencies, and that will pull down, I'm afraid, the old world of capitalism, I suspect. And I think that was the reason why they built up this absurd narrative, which unfortunately people took, and lockdown. I think the point of it is to destroy the economy and specifically the sovereign currencies of the world. I know with horror that America's also done several things recently that damages its long-run status as ultimately the creditor of last resort for the whole world, petrodollar. They've been doing things that are equivalent to hacking at your own ankles with a chainsaw whilst up a tree, and it's that bad. So we've got this backdrop of governments everywhere doing things that will definitely cause mass suffering, excess deaths, destroy the economy, and when things like that happen, again, I'm not a historian, but when you get this much discontinuity, which we're going to get, that almost always leads to war. It almost always leads to war. So I'm afraid I think there's going to be food shortages, an economic breakdown, probably martial law, if not then absolute warfare over diminished resources. What was I going to say? Yes, of course, we were told by Professor Bill Gates, that well-known biologist, that, you know, he said, we'll only be able to, you know, return to normal when we pretty much vaccinate the planet. You remember him making that silly sign? Well, that's absurd as well, you know, Greg and your listeners, that even if the vaccines were safe and effective, and they're not, and we'll come back to that, but even if they were, why would you vaccinate the whole world? You'd only give it to the people who are vulnerable. The rest of us just ride over it, and then we acquire lifelong immunity to, you know, this alleged virus and all of its alleged variants. I'm not even sure. it is actually circulating. I think it's definitely exists in a Petri dish somewhere or in a computer. So so I could tell when Gates and that evil man Tony Blair, the former British Prime Minister, when he said, oh, of course, we'll need to have ways of being able to identify who's been vaccinated and who not, and therefore this idea of vaccine passports was born. They've been working on it at least 3 years, by the way, Greg, at least 3 years in the European Parliament. They've been working bills for so-called vaccine passports, green passes, for all of that time. It's literally absurd.
Excuse me, I had my mic off. Folks, I'm telling you, Dr. Yeadon is one of the precious few with an impeccable credential who's willing to call the scam what it's been from day one. So thank you, Dr. Yeadon. Thank you, Greg Hunter. And folks, quite bluntly, this is a depopulation weapon foisted upon the world based on a psyop of a nonstop fear war. You know, fear is the opposite of faith to Satan, what faith is to Jesus. And you literally immobilize the population of the world by this constant onslaught of fear. It's an it's an unprecedented world mass formation psychosis operation that's been predicted by many people, including C.S. Lewis. And I hope you stay tuned, because I'm going to share something from one of his incredible works that's hardly known, and it's called The Abolition of Man. But that's coming up later in the show. So I encourage you folks to go out to usawatchdog.com and listen to the interview that Greg Hunter did with Dr. Michael Yeadon. It's about an hour plus. It's worth every minute that you'll spend on it. But right now, folks, we have to move on to the Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police report, the 2020 elections. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Kabuki Theater. From Japanese, Ka means salt, Bu means dance. Ki means skill, from the verb. Kabu means to slam or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flattened curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or it'll hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Folks, those of you who have been listening for any time know that we've covered much of what the Luciferians do to cause all of this. You know, these shows date all the way back to somewhere in 2010 or 2011. And at the beginning, they were all based on scripture. And I tried to tie it in by the grace of God to what's going on in the world. And I would share these occult practices of Luciferians, and two of them in particular. One's the Hegelian dialectic, or problem, reaction, solution. And the other one was ordo ab chao, or order out of chaos. Now, we've heard people in politics say never let a good crisis go to waste. Well, that kind of encompasses both of those. So you have problem, reaction, solution. And then right away, of course, our politics have all sorts of ready-made bills and legislation to foist upon the American public. And this is happening all around the world now, too. And then out of this chaos, they create order. Ordo ab chao. Now, last Sunday, we were talking to our pastor, and he presented this fantastic outline of the end times. And when you look at everything that's happening, it lines up almost perfectly to what the Bible talks about. The signs that we'll see. You know, Jesus taught about it in Matthew 24. St. Paul spent a good bit of time on it. St. Peter did. And, of course, probably the go-to book in the entire Bible is the book of Revelation. Thank you, St. John. But it was a very good talk last week that our pastor gave, and I'm going to share that with you later on. So there's all these different narratives in the world right now, and it's actually very sickening. And we've got one of the top advisors to Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. His name is Yuval Noah Harari, top advisor. And we've played him several times here on SDG. And I'm going to dive into his philosophy a little bit more in Ken's Corner. But, you know, he's bad-mouthing and bashing the Bible. And they're laughing at the end times and all this. But have you ever thought, folks, could the Luciferians be doing all of this, staging all of this, accordance with the prophecies in the Bible to dupe us Christians into compliance, saying, oh, I'm not going to worry about it. Jesus is coming. You know, Jesus warned about that in Matthew 24. My pastor pointed out that to me, you know, where he said, if you hear that I'm here or hear them there, don't believe. Well, that sounds like Project Bluebeam. So I'm just wondering, folks, is that where it's going? But I've stumbled on this. Actually, a listener sent it to me this week, and it was very good. It's a synopsis from a clip that Jan Markle did at her Understanding the Times conference. And I don't know Jan, but this was very good. And she just stitched together some information concerning what's going on in this world. It's crazy, folks, but it's real. And I would like to play it for you. I think it's about 4 or 5 minutes long. It's called Nearing Storm of Deception. Actually, it's 7 minutes long. Please take a listen to this.
This is the way.
Before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, he's got a right-hand man who has worked hand-in-hand with him through these recent years. He's talked about not only the global, you know, world economy, but obviously digital, all these things we're talking about. But what I want you to catch in this next video clip, and I want you two to comment, is how invasive it is. I mean, think about, we're going to have this digital bill of rights. By whatever happened to for the people, by the people, of the people, I mean, that's totally out. But listen to this carefully and kind of catch what the intent is and how intrusive it is. Let's listen to this.
And COVID is critical because this is what convinces people to accept, to legitimize total biometric surveillance. If we want to stop this epidemic, we need not just to monitor people, we need to monitor what's happening under their skin. What we have seen so far is corporations and governments collecting data about where we go, who we meet, what movies we watch. The next phase is the surveillance going under our skin. We now see mass surveillance systems established even in democratic countries which previously rejected them, and we also see a change in the nature of surveillance. Previously, surveillance was mainly above the skin. Now it's going under the skin. Governments want to know not just where we go or who we meet. Above all, they want to know what is happening under our skin. What's our body temperature? What's our blood pressure? What is our medical condition? Now humans are developing even bigger powers than ever before. We are really acquiring divine powers of creation and destruction. We are really upgrading humans into gods. We are acquiring, for instance, the power to re-engineer life. Humans are now hackable animals. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, this, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will, that's over. I mean, all this story about Jesus rising from the dead and being the Son of God, this is fake news.
So hackable, people are hackable now. Tell us what that means. Tell us what the implications are.
I think we need to explain who this Mr. Yuval Harari is. He's an Israeli. He's a homosexual. I think, and he's the person that Klaus Schwab listens to more than anybody. He may be the most dangerous man on the planet. You've just heard him for a couple of minutes here. When he speaks, world leaders listen, including to the nonsense he just spoke there.
You think if you ever want to see what evil looks like, it's that dude. Okay? I mean, if you listen to this guy speak, man, this guy is full out evil, the things he's thinking about. But what is Willie trying to do? They want to hack your brain so that they can tell you what to think and how to think. And when that last little clip that said that Jesus rose from the dead was fake news, he is such a God hater. He believes that any faith in God, the God above the clouds, he calls him, that any faith is just fictitious and fake news. So he wants to be able to hack the brain to eliminate people believing like that. He believes that's a false narrative. And so they have their narrative. And so with this digital currency, with this ability to hack people and put things under your skin and perhaps in your brain, they want to be able to control the thoughts of people. This is why it's so dangerous. And Elon Musk has talked about it and a few other people about putting chips in your brain and things like that. That's where they're going, guys. Now, I hope we're raptured before that. But for goodness sakes, that's pretty evil. It's basically they want to destroy belief.
That's right.
Belief in the one true God. Now, that's when you know... I would say that guy's probably satanically, demonically possessed, man, to say things like that. That is Antichrist language. We blaspheme the God of heaven.
Keep your eye on this man wherever you can hear him. Listen to him.
Yeah.
And
bad dude.
Ponder what he's saying. It's very dark. It's very dark.
Recently in an interview, he was talking about hacking us. And he said, you know, we're going to have these implants so that you don't believe fake news. And he went on, he says, all of us have this propensity, you know, to different things, to think about politics this way or ethics this way. But we're going to make sure that when we do this, we'll be able to keep people from these things, anything that's fake news. So that resurrection statement, that's why we included that in the video clip, because he specifically says the resurrection of Jesus. We're going to keep people from believing the resurrection or anything about biblical morality.
So there you have it, folks. I thought that was such good primer for what we're going to talk about in Ken's Corner and expand upon later in other shows. But we have this great struggle right now between the Tao, as C.S. Lewis calls it in The Abolition of Man, that is the natural law and truth and all the things that society has been built upon. And now this situational ethics, these postmodernistic ideas of your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. So thank you, Jan Markle, and your group, Understanding the Times. Don't know anything about them, but like I said, a listener sent that to me, and I thought it was so relevant for what the Lord put on my heart to share this week. But right now, folks, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. There she is. Hey, Henrietta, you're a little wet this morning. We've got one of those rainy spring mornings. They're so nice, you know. But you do need to get it to dry out because I'm looking outside and that grass is getting high. And don't even talk about the fields, folks. Wow. But anyways, last week we talked about shortwave communications. And I promised you this week I'd get into shortwave radios. Now, specifically, when you get a transmit-receive type technology, it's known as a shortwave transceiver. But you can also have a shortwave receiver. And I have three of them. I have a Zenith transoceanic. And then, I actually have four. I have a Heathkit that I got with my dad. I have a Radio Shack DX440. It was my go-to machine. And then Terry got me a Grundig YB400, which is portable. And I've even traveled with the Realistic and the YB-400. And back in the days when I did a lot of traveling for the company, I would take that Realistic with me, and I felt like I had the world at my fingertips. Now, I primarily used it to listen to William Cooper and some of the other hosts on WWCR back in the 1990s. And that was before we had all these podcasts and everything we could do on the Internet today. But I think it's based on everything we see and the control of information and the risk of Internet and grid shutdowns. I think it's time for all of us to acquire what's known as a transceiver. Because if all you have right now, like me, is a receiver, all you can do is listen. And I think if you and me and everybody that cares about preparing for what's coming were to acquire a transceiver, it would be further motivation to get our ham radio license. Now, if the entire society collapses, it doesn't matter if you have a license. But right now, I would advise you to get the license. And all you have to do is take a few multiple choice questions, you know, type tests. There's one for a technician, and then there's a general operator. And you can get tutorials and all that and join your local ham club in your area, and you can do that. It's fairly simple. Now, there's one item you'll also need. It's known as a power supply. So the transceiver has the electronics in it, but then to boost that signal that you generate with the transmitter portion as you speak or type Morse code, you need to amplify it as you send that signal up the antenna so that other people can hear it on their receivers. So you get these standalone power supplies. And if all you want to do with your transceiver at this point is listen, you could probably use what's known as the Pyramid PX4KX. It's about $35. It only has 3.5 amps, but that's enough to power the transceiver and receiver mode. Now, if you want to get into some transmission and you want to be able to communicate during a crisis, you're going to need to get something with more amps, like 23 to 25, even maybe 30 amps of power. And they're going to set you back anywhere between $80 to $200. And a couple good ones are the Astron RS-35A. That's the 25-amp linear power supply. And then there's a QJE PS-23 SWI. And I know there's a lot of numbers here and all that, folks, but what I'm trying to do is just introduce you a bit to this, and I'll give you a reference for this at the end. Now, what I'd like to do for the next few minutes is just talk about transceivers that you can get for $1,600 or less. There's all sorts of good ones in that range. And I think it's a personal choice in many areas, but then you want to look at features and functions. So I'm not going to get into all of the gory details on this. All I'm going to say is that you can get this at the SWLING.com blog, and it's the best general coverage transceivers. So I'm going to leave it at that for that, but there's also a used market, and there's some really good ones out there in the used market, and you're going to get them for a fraction of the price, anywhere from a Kenwood to some of the Japanese brands, and there's even some Chinese brands out there. But you have to keep this one thing in mind if you purchase a quality used radio. It's going to have excellent value with regard to what you purchase it for. But on the flip side, if that radio is any more than, say, 10 to 15 years old, you're going to find a diminishing ability to find replacement parts for it. And transceivers generally have to be maintained, especially the transmitter portion. So like I said, you can go to the SWLING.com site and learn all about this. And they also have a section out there in the marketplace where you can buy and sell used. So, folks, I'm in the process of doing this. I encourage all of you to do it. And if you have any questions or want to chat about it, of course, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com. But right now, folks, it's time to move on to the Hopium Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium. So I have two things here in Hopium Report. And folks, I'm telling you, it's so crazy out there now. You could do a whole show on that segment. You can do a whole show on the Absurdian segment. We could do a whole show on any one of these segments. But all I'm trying to do is piece these together now in a related fashion. And we're looking at the absurdity of postmodernism the stinking thinking of these secular humanists and how bankrupt their logic is when you take it to the end. In this section today, I stumbled upon this clip by Jeff Dunham. He's about my age, an American ventriloquist, stand-up comedian. He's even been an actor. He's had television shows. He's been on Late Night with David Letterman. Comedy Central did several specials with him. He's been on The Tonight Show. And he actually had 6 specials on Comedy Central and a television show there, the Jeff Dunham Show. But this clip is a recent clip at one of his tours. And he has a I have to be careful. I just don't start laughing. He's throwing out all these truths as he talks to one of his dummies, and this one looks just like Joe Biden. And it's pretty good. So what I'd like to do is just have you listen to Jeff Dunham, and I have to call up his clip here and get this going. So this is about a 2-minute clip. Jeff Dunham talking to his dummy that looks like Joe Biden, and I'm telling you, he's throwing the truths out there. So I have it in the Hopium Report because I think humor is a good way to wake up a lot of people.
And you're not the president.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Come on, man. Everyone says I look just like him. And somebody else is always telling me what to say. Show. We get it. You know, Walter, a lot of people support the president.
Name two.
Okay, his wife and his sister, he gets those two confused a lot. Oh, tell me I'm wrong.
So what's the purpose of you coming out here dressed as Biden?
I'm pretending to be the president.
What's that going to accomplish?
Nothing. So we'll have the same record.
Biden has accomplished a few things.
Name two. Yeah, that's harder than the SAT, isn't it?
Okay, so you're the president. What are you going to do? Stay the course?
Stay awake. Falling asleep in public as the president is a presidential senior moment.
Right.
A Joe moment. Jomo. You have mojo, I have Jomo. One's your cruising, the other you're snoozing.
Okay, so you're dressed up as the president. You want to have like a press conference?
Oh, sure, that'd be great.
Well, you know the answers to any real questions?
I don't know. Are you a hunter? You look just like him.
If I ask you tough questions about current issues, will you have answers?
I will if this thing in my ear works and the folks backstage tell me what to say.
Do you really think that's how that works?
That was brilliant, folks. So, you know, the comedians of today, like Jeff and others, are essentially the philosophers of our day and age. And George Carlin was that also. Did you hear that audience laughing, folks, and applauding? Do you really think this man had 81 million votes? We all know he didn't. There's 2,000 mules out. It's getting virtually no coverage by even Fox and Newsmax. Yet it's just packed full of all the evidence to prove that what the humor in this skit we just played was alluding to is true. You know, truth is a very, very interesting thing. It tends to pop up in the most embarrassing and least opportune times for those who are waging war against it. So I put this in the Hopium Report. And I believe Jeff knocked this out of the park with his dummy impersonating a dummy. So praise the Lord for humor. Thank you, Lord. Now, on the front in Ukraine, we also have a hopeful report. It appears that the armed forces in Ukraine are collapsing on the battlefield, and defeats are happening left and right and very fast over a vast area in Ukraine. In fact, just yesterday, the Ukrainian president, the actor-in-chief, the druggie, yes, folks, he admitted to using cocaine. He told the country, and this is a quote, Ukraine is not eager to talk Russia's Vladimir Putin, but that it has to face the reality that this will likely be necessary in the war. Now, that's quite a turnaround, because just a week ago, Zelensky said that Ukraine will never give up any territory and it would win against the Russian army. So over the past 2 weeks, the situation for Ukraine has gotten dire. The armed forces are being decimated on every battlefield where they face the Russians. And you're saying to yourself, why did you put this in the Hopium Report? Well, just hang with me, folks, and you'll see why, okay? These Russian technologies, like their long-range artillery, it's just smashing thousands of Ukrainian troops. In fact, it's been so devastating, and the surrender level's been so high that the Ukrainian legislature just voted on a bill that allows their military officers to shoot surrendering Ukrainian troops in the backs. And this is documented. You can see the videos where Ukrainian troops are talking about this actually happening. Folks, the reality on the battlefield is so dire right now and so in opposition to the lies you're hearing on the legacy media that it's almost like it's two different stories. Now, there's also another very hopeful trend. The opinion of the general public is taking a significant turn in favor of Russia and what Russia is trying to accomplish. You know, most citizens in Western nations are now becoming aware that the Nazis are, in fact, the Ukrainian government. I mean, the newspaper's articles are out there pre-scam by the major, major journal. You know, major journals and major newspapers and some of the top... I hesitate to use the term journalist anymore, but what I'm getting at is these major media networks actually called Ukraine and the leadership in Ukraine Nazis, and they've done major stories on the Azov battalion, and people are waking up to this. So there's no longer this mind-dumbed support for Ukraine in their position. And so these same Western citizens are seeing things that contradict the good guy story that the media has given to Zelensky. I mean, he admitted on television that he uses cocaine because it gives him energy to keep going all day long. So people in the West are starting to realize that Ukraine is being run by a drug addict. He's an admitted cocaine user, folks. And now they're starting to question some of his financial holdings. I mean, this guy's quickly approaching $1 billion in net worth, with a $30 million mansion down in Florida, with $750 million on account. Where did all this money come from a two-bit actor that became the president of a minor, I'm not going to say minor, but a rather small Eastern European country? This country's the size of Texas, folks. Could be a country on its own, but and if it was, it wouldn't be a ginormous country like Canada or the Soviet Union or Russia or the United States. So how did he get close to $750 million? So people are waking up. Even an archbishop in the Church of England is now speaking the truth concerning this whole conflict. So I have this clip from the archbishop of, I don't have his name. I'm sorry. It's a one-minute clip. Just take a listen. This is also very hopeful, hence it's in the Hopium Report.
There is only one who is standing up to the forces of evil. Don't count on Boris Johnson in England. Don't count on Macron in France. Don't count on Draghi in Italy. It's Vladimir Putin, who may be no angel and no saint, but nevertheless, he is a man of intelligence and great courage. He has the means of standing up to the one world government.
The Russians are fighting in Ukraine, but not in such a way as to smash or crush Ukraine. The purpose of Putin, he has said, is to denazify and demilitarize. But foolish Europe is following the United States to attempt to crush Russia. The real aggressor, attacker, is not the apparent attacker. Russia was provoked for several years from the Ukraine by the agents of the United States. Russia has needed to defend itself.
Everything he said there, folks, is truth. We've covered it on this show. So there you have an archbishop in the Church of England starting to sound the warning. So, folks, continue to speak out. And I can use your help. And I never ask for money. I don't need your money. I need your help. If you could share these podcasts on your favorite go-to places, put it in the comment sections. Share it with your friends. Share it with your families. If you have places you can repost this, please help me out. We need to get the word out. You know, it's basically a one-man show here. Sister Kathy sends some news articles. I actually haven't heard much from her lately. And if you could pray for Sister Kathy, I don't know what's going on with her for sure. I know her and her mother moved. But, folks, the biggest help you could give me after your prayers are to go out and post links to these shows wherever you can, spread the word. And if you know another platform that might be able to use it, I've tried to convert these to video. It's so time consuming. The uploads don't work half the time. I haven't been very successful with that, but that's where I could use your help. But right now, folks, we have to move on. It's time for the Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
So anyways, folks, I stumbled on this clip, and you know how when you go to YouTube, well, I don't like YouTube, but you know how when you go to YouTube, they have all these other clips over on the right-hand column. Well, when I was looking at that Nearing Deception clip from Jan Markle's Understanding the Times conference, I looked over and I saw this clip. It was called Young Americans Don't Know Anything, and it was a very humorous look at the absurdity of our ignorance as a population by this guy named Justin. He did a very good job. You know, he asked questions like, how many states are there in the United States? And that just stumped most of the people he interviewed. And they even found this one guy that was wearing a graduation cap and gown. And he said, what is three? And the guy didn't know. But my favorite was somebody who answered the question with Kennedy as the guy who fought the Civil War. Seriously, folks. I don't know what that was all about. But make sure you give Justin out on YouTube a follow. That was, let me see if the link, you can't, it's just, you have to, the clip's titled Young Americans Don't Know Anything. So what I'd like to do is call that clip up for you and have you give it a listen. It's about 4 minutes long, I think. Where are you at? There it is. Young Americans know nothing. No, that's not it. Here it is. Insane. Young Americans don't know anything. 4 minutes and 17 seconds.
Do you know when the U.S. was founded?
No.
Take a guess. Around when?
Probably like, I don't know, like 1901?
Yes, very good.
It is?
It was close, around there, but I'll give it to you. Who fought in the Civil War?
I don't know.
Do you know how many continents there are?
No.
How many states make up the United States?
Dude, I know this.
You know this?
I do. That's crazy. I don't want to do this to the...
Say a number.
I don't know.
No, you do know this.
You
do know
this.
Do you know who the president is right now?
Joe Biden.
Do you know who the vice president is right now?
The black lady.
What was the question? How many states in the United States?
Yeah.
29, I guess.
29?
I guess. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. You got it. You know how many states make up the United States?
50.
You know what the capital is?
Of?
United States?
Harrisburg? Oh. Is there a capital in the U.S.?
Who fought in the Civil War?
In the Civil War? Wasn't it... What's his name?
Kennedy
against who?
I don't.
You know what the capital of the United States is?
No.
You know what 3 times 3 times 3 is?
No.
Yes, you do, man. Take a guess.
Can I think about it?
Yeah, go ahead. How many make up 1 dozen?
How many make up 1 dozen? How many what?
Like, how many eggs are in 1 dozen?
10.
How long is 1 decade?
1 decade. No idea.
Do you know who the president was before Trump?
No.
Who's the president of the United States?
Biden.
Who's the vice president?
I do not know. I do not.
The current vice president.
I know who it is, but I can't get his name.
Do you know what 3 times 3 times 3 is? No, you know it. You know it.
Is it I? No. Is it? No.
You tell me.
Dude, you have me doing math and I'm second.
What country is Mount Rushmore in?
Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Japan? Nah, that's not right.
You're close.
Tokyo?
Yes. Do you know what year the U.S. was established?
18-something? No.
Yes. What year did the U.S. gain their independence? What year was the U.S. founded?
That's it.
Oh, man. I don't even know.
Around when? Take a guess.
It ends with a 72.
What's the first two?
1472?
Yes. How many are in 1 dozen?
How many what?
Are in a dozen. Let's say eggs.
10?
What's 3 times 3 times 3?
2 times 3 is 9?
Yes. How many states make up the United States of America?
Oh my God. I don't know, actually. I don't know, 16.
How many?
I don't know, 16, 13.
16 or 13, you're close.
I don't know.
Right in the middle.
14? No, 15.
Yes. Do you know who the president was before Trump?
Obama. My man.
It's your man? Do you know who the president was before Trump?
Of course not. I don't really look into presidents. I truly do not, like, feed into or listen to presidents at all. I'm like a spiritual person, so I'm really like on my own path, but I am trying to better humanity though.
What is this for?
Yeah, TikTok, yeah.
Nice.
I'm almost at 500,000.
Oh, awesome. Good job.
I'm starting the YouTube today too.
Gosh. Golly. Gosh.
Yeah, Gomer, that's all I can say too is gosh golly. You know, these were normal people on a street in a big city. It looked like it was Times Square in New York City. And I liked it. Didn't you like how Justin, when they would give the wrong answer, instead of saying no or buzzing them, he'd say yes or that's right. You know, 4 minutes of the most outright insane stupidity from young Americans. Folks, this is a demonstration of the sheer level, the unmitigated lack of thinking, this absence of facts and truth in the minds of the current we the people. And it's all by design. It's all by plan. This is what the globalists wanted. They wanted a dumbed down society that would be easily duped, compliant, incapable of critical thinking. I mean, how about that? There's a guy in this video wearing a cap and gown. I said that and he didn't know what 3 times 3 times 3 is. These people are literally incapable of actually thinking. Come nothing but brainwashing centers for the establishment. They should be shut down immediately. I mean, we pay our tax dollars to fund this programming in the minds of our youth. All teachers and administrators should be fired immediately and permanently barred from teaching ever again. I know you may say, well, but Ken, there's some really good teachers out there. Well, let's call them collateral damage. We're going to have to start anew because, you know, if there's one bad potato in that sack of potatoes, usually within a very short time, you ruin them all. So if you don't get to it soon enough, and we haven't, most of those potatoes in that bag have to be tossed. And education system. So if you're a teacher out there listening and offended you, please forgive me, and you're an exception. Folks, this is just another example of the narcissistic, self-absorbed, materialistic, egotistical society that we've created all around us because we have denied the truth, the Tao, as C.S. Lewis calls it. And these children today can understand nothing but self-gratification. Nothing matters to them except satisfying their belly, satisfying their ego, and satisfying their sexual urges. And C.S. Lewis warned us about this stuff, folks. These are the same people that dictate to you and me how we should live and what we can think and what we can say, and we'll be in those protests, you know, one day screaming against any kind of protection of the unborn, basically saying kill babies, and then the very next week screaming to get guns off the street because a gun killed all those children. And God bless them and their families, folks. But these people do not critically think. They have no idea about history, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. God help us all. And don't even get me started on the lie of one man, one vote. This is why people should have to pass some sort of education test before they have the right to vote. Some kind of civics test where you have to know a little bit about government functions. You know, back in the day, you used to have to be a landowner to vote. And I wonder if that wasn't a good idea. But hey, folks, I have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for Ken's Corner. And that's spelled with a K. Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started. So, folks, I do a lot of work, and those of you who know me know that Terry and I built our house and all the other buildings on our property. I love doing projects, and so what I do is I put a headset on. I used to have a Walkman when this all started years ago, you know, the Sony Walkman cassette, and I have cases and cases of cassettes, and Terry's finally convinced me to start passing them on. So a lot of times I give them to people and they look at me like, what is that? Well, it's a cassette. And I had a high-speed duplicator and I was trying to share all this truth. But years ago, while painting the walls in our living room, I should say repainting, I was listening to an audiobook titled The Abolition of Man by C.S. Lewis. And then suddenly all of this insanity in the world, and I saw it back then when most people thought I was crazy, all the insanity in the world crystallized in my mind. And what I'm trying to say is I finally understood what was actually happening with respect to all of the bad decisions in society, the stinking thinking of the humanists, so to speak. Because what I realized, and this is all thanks to C.S. Lewis and this work titled The Abolition of Man, that they supplanted truth and deep spiritual conviction of good and evil for experience and feelings. And that's what you hear all of these people talk about, you know, like from Schwab's top advisor, Noah, what's his name? I just forgot, Noah Yavel something. But I have a clip that we've played on here several times. And what I'd like to do is cue it up for my talk about truth based on what C.S. Lewis had to say. So have another listen just to refresh our memories to the stinking thinking of the Luciferians and their minions. And, you know, I'm starting to include a lot of the members of the more broadly defined Christendom. So I'm not talking about the born-again believers who are living it. I'm talking about the people that identify as a Christian but really don't live it. You know, so Christian in name only. But anyways, have a listen again to what Noah had to say concerning truth, the Bible, and the Ten Commandments.
What is good and what is evil? What is a pious action and what is a sin? So in previous eras, again, you went to God or you went to the Pope or you went to the Bible. Let's say with the case of homosexuality. So in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church came and said homosexuality is a sin. Why? Because God said so. Because the Bible said so. Because the Pope said so. And this was the source of ethical authority. Nobody cared much what people actually felt about it. Now in the era of humanist ethics, the saying is we don't care very much what God says or what the Bible says or what the Pope says. We want to know how people actually feel. If two men are in love and they both feel very happy with that and they don't harm anybody, so what could possibly be wrong with it? It's very simple. The highest authority in the field of ethics is the authority of human feelings. If humans feel good about something and nobody feels bad about it, then it's good. Of course, there are some difficult questions also in humanist ethics. What happens if I feel good about something, let's say an extramarital affair, but my husband feels very bad about it? So whose feelings count for more? Then you have a dilemma, an ethical dilemma. You have a discussion. But the key point is that the discussion will be conducted in terms of human feelings, not in terms of divine commandments.
Folks, that's a bald-faced lie. Feelings are the shallowest part of our soul and should never, and I stress that, ever be used to define morality and ethics. Because one day you're hungry and you're angry and you lash out, oh, I was entitled to that because I felt bad. One day you have some road rage and bad things happen on the highway and you have an excuse. I was angry. I was angry at my boss. You know, folks, those feelings come from the most shallowest part of what makes you you. You know, your mind, your will, and your emotions. And this dude says there is nothing known as will. Well, the Bible says otherwise. We do have willpower. We do have the freedom to choose because God gave us that. And we also have a mind which has been dumbed down. That's what I showed you from the Absurdian report. Those people have been dumbed down, so their mind has been raped, literally, void of logic, void of critical thinking, void of anything that makes them a capable thinker. Their feelings are being manipulated by the media, by junk food, by all sorts of toxins in their bodies. And then their emotions which are kind of a finer essence of their feelings, they're being turned on and off with a finesse of a conductor of a great symphony. And then they're denying that you even have willpower. But we know that's all stinking thinking. That's the stinking thinking of the globalists. So back to this book that I discovered years ago, The Abolition of Man by C.S. Lewis. Well, back in 1943, Lewis set out to persuade his readers of the importance and the relevance of universal values, things like courage and honor in contemporary society, because those things were becoming out of fashion, so to speak. And I'm telling you, this book is both astonishing, it truly is, and prophetic. This thing was written back in 1943, folks. That's going on, what, 80 years ago? And it's one of the most highly debated books or works of C.S. Lewis. It's very small. You can actually sit down and read it in one evening. I encourage you to do that. If you'd like a PDF copy, I can send that to you. Email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com. And the National Review actually chose it as number 7 on their top 100 best nonfiction books of the 20th century. It pits humanistic materialism against the natural law, or what he calls the Tao, T-A-O. Now, I was going to prepare these clips, and I ran out of time. So what I'm going to do is read these three clips, and let's just see what you think. I would love to exchange some thoughts with any of you out there that are interested. So if you would like to, please email me anything you have to say about this. I just love those kind of discussions. So here's the first quote where he's talking about this truth, the Tao, and which others may call natural law, the Tao, as he calls it, traditional morality, or the first principles of practical reason, or the first platitudes. It's not one among a series of possible systems of value. It is the sole source of all value judgments. If it's rejected, all value is rejected. If any value is retained, it is retained. The effort to refute it and raise a new system of value in its place is self-contradictory. And don't we see this all, folks, going around us right now? We can't even defend biology with regard to gender. We can't even defend the life of an unborn in a mother's womb as a living, breathing soul, although it is. And that's because we're trying to raise a new system of value in place of the truth, and it becomes self-contradictory. And we're seeing that all over the place. And I continue with this first quote. There has never been and never will be a radically new judgment of value in the history of the world. What purports to be new systems, or as they call them, ideologies, all consist of fragments of the Tao itself, arbitrarily wrenched from its context of the whole, and then swollen to madness in their isolation. Yet still owing to the Tao, and to it alone, such validity as they possess. So what they're doing is they're dicing and slicing the truth right now. They're picking and choosing, and they're starting to see these contradictions pop up left and right, like a whack-a-mole game at the amusement park. So think about that a little bit, folks. Maybe go back and re-listen to that quote. Now here's the second quote. The real picture is that one dominant age, let us suppose the 100th century AD, so he threw it way out there into the future, kind of an amillennial view, in fact, and we're going to talk about that a little longer or later, which resists all previous ages most successfully and dominates all subsequent ages most irresistibly. And C.S. Lewis got into a bit of this thinking in his third book in the Space Trilogy, That Hideous Strength. Now I continue with the quote, and thus is the real master of all human species. But then within this master generation, itself an infinitesimally minority of the species, because you think about this, this is one generation, 80 centuries from now, which is a small portion, and in that small portion, the power will be exercised by a minority smaller still. So it's the 1% of the 1%, folks. Man's conquest of nature, if the dreams of some scientific planners are realized, people like Noah Yuval Yari that we just listened to, means the rule of a few hundreds of men over billions upon billions of men. And let me read that again. If the dreams of some scientific planners are realized, this means the rule of a few hundred of men over billions and billions of men. That's right, Paul. C.S. Lewis nailed it way back in 1943. That's exactly what's happening today. He saw it all coming. But let's get back to C.S. Lewis, okay? There's a little bit more in this second quote yet. There neither is nor can be any simple increase of power on man's side. Each new power won by man is a power over man as well. Now think about that a little bit. That's deep, folks. Each advance leaves him weaker as well as stronger. In every victory, besides there being the general who triumphs, he is also the prisoner who follows the triumphal car. And back in the times of Rome, when one of the Roman generals would conquer another country, he would bring their leader or leaders behind his chariot, triumphal car, on his march to Caesar in the capital city of Rome. Think about this, folks. It's what's happening to us today. Now, here's the third quote, and that's where I'll wrap up my musings on C.S. Lewis. So just stay with me here. It's not much longer. And here's C.S. Lewis. What is not conjecture is that our hope, even of a conditioned happiness, rests on what is ordinarily called chance, the chance that benevolent impulses may on the whole predominate in our conditioners. Those are these global leaders. For without the judgment, benevolence is good. That is, without re-entering the Tao, you know, saying doing good things is a good thing to do. They can have no ground for promoting or stabilizing these impulses rather than any others. By the logic of their position, they must just take their impulses as they come from chance. And chan here means nature, okay? So we're back to Islam. It is from heredity, digestion, the weather, and the ideas that the motives of the conditioners will spring. So that's why I was warning you before that if you use feelings for all these things, so if you base what you're feeling on whether or not you've got good upbringing and, you know, good genes, so to speak, or maybe you're a victim of circumstance, you know, don't they play that card a lot, the victim card? And digestion, maybe you have a stomachache or some kind of health issue, or maybe it's a bad rainy day and you're just upset because you can't go on that picnic. Whatever it is, if you're using emotions as the arbiter of truth, it's going to sway and it's going to whip you to and fro. So back to C.S. Lewis. Their extreme rationalism by seeing through all rational motives leaves them creatures of wholly irrational behavior. And to that I say amen. If you will not obey the Tao or else commit suicide, obedience to impulse and therefore in the long run to mere nature is the only course left open. And don't they always preach that we're just animals? And didn't Yuval Noah say in his talk that there's no such thing as will? We're led by feelings, the highest order of man. What a crock of lies, folks. And their final conquest over nature has not really happened. You know, earlier on in the book, C.S. Lewis was talking about the ideals of a society, the preservation of the species. But why should the species be preserved, C.S. Lewis asks in this quote. One of the questions before them is whether this feeling for posterity, they know well how it is produced, shall not continue or not. However far they go back or down, they can find no ground to stand on. Every motive they try to act on becomes at once a petitio. It is not that they are bad men. It is that they are men, not men at all. Stepping outside the Tao, they have stepped into the void. Nor are their subjects necessarily unhappy men. They are not men at all. They are artifacts. Man's final conquest has proved to be the abolition of man. And that's where this stinking thing is headed, folks. Folks, I'm telling you, postmodernism is like driving a copper nail into an oak tree. You know what happens if you do that? Well, at first it appears that everything's okay. But if you watch that oak tree over time, that copper in the tree will kill the oak tree. And that's what stinking thinking does. That's what this secular humanism does. That's what all the garbage you're witnessing in the world right now will do to civil society. You know, Margaret Thatcher said that there is but a thin veneer of civility upon humanity. So thinking that good and evil has no relevancy to life destroys a culture and ultimately leaves it totally barren, folks. And that's the direction we're heading in right now. We are literally the authors of our own destruction by believing that good and evil are subjective and not real. I mean, come on, folks. It's either evil to kill that unborn baby in the womb or it isn't. It's not a matter of choice. Folks, it's either right or it's wrong. This poisoning has been going on so long, takes on so many qualities of a cancer, that I think it's a very good analogy. You know, the body never battles cancer because it doesn't recognize it as a disease. So the cancer ultimately metastasizes and kills the body unless you bring in radical nutrition, unless you bring in radical lifestyle changes that shocks your system away. And that's literally what we need to do right now. Folks, remember, this book was written nearly 80 years ago, and yet it precisely defines the current situation we find ourselves in. When truth no longer seems available or relevant, people begin to seek something else out. That's why a lot of people are turning to things like radical Islam, and a lot of these crazy things you see with regard to these CIA ops, which we call school shootings. You know, I encourage you folks, go out and read this book and do it before your eyes are totally sewn shut by skeptics and self-centered conceit and just the brain numbing that comes from this current society. I encourage you all to go out there and read it, please. But right now, folks, it's time for Back to the Future. In this segment, folks, we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. And I'd like to wind this episode back to maybe 1990, when George Carlin was in the midst of all of his HBO specials. And there's one out now on HBO titled The American Dream. It's a two-part series looking at the life of George Carlin. Now, why am I bringing up George Carlin? Well, earlier I talked about Dunham and his ventriloquist act with the dummy that looked like Biden, and how certain comedians and comics in our day have become the philosophers of this age. And George Carlin certainly was one of those men. So the clip I'm going to share with you now came from this latest George Carlin HBO special that Terry and I watched last weekend over Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Excellent. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you go out. Now, he was an atheist, at least an agnostic. And his thinking concerning the ultimate reality in terms of the Creator God, Father God, the salvation we have through Jesus Christ, that's all lacking. And he's a bit vulgar, and I'm going to give you a profanity warning here. So if you have any young listeners, please get them out of the room or cover their ears. And I'd like to share with you this clip from George Carlin, where he's talking about the American dream. 5 minutes long, folks, and it's packed with truth.
American bullshit.
America's leading industry is still the manufacture, distribution, packaging, and marketing of bullshit. This country was founded by a group of slave owners who told us that all men are created equal. That is what's known as being stunningly full of shit.
There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever be fixed. Because the owners of this country don't want that. This country is owned by 800 or 900 people who run everything, do everything, control everything. It's all one big ownership class in this country.
We're led to feel free by the exercise of meaningless choices. Ice cream flavors, what do you want? We got 31. Got the flavor of the week, got the flavor of the month. But political parties, we're down to 2.
Politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have owners. They own you. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. It's a big club. And you ain't in it. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Americans have been bought off and silenced by toys and gizmos. With our microwave hot dogs and plastic vomit, fake dog shit and cinnamon dental floss and lemon-scented toilet paper and sneakers with lights in the heels. Millions of semi-conscious Americans day after day shopping and eating. It's the new national pastime. Fuck baseball. It's consumption. So where do people think these politicians come from? They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders.
Machine gun bacon.
That's what the owners count on. They want obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime. Then now they want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
Of course, there's a reason why we're all drugged. The drug companies want it that way.
The drug industry has us taking things to get awake, things to go to sleep, things to pep up, things to forget about the grief you had from something.
So they have a drug problem in this country. Where do you hear that? At the drugstore.
You don't have to be a political scientist to see the bigger dick foreign policy theory at work. It goes something like this. What? They have bigger dicks? Bomb them!
That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people.
Industry, isn't that roughly our job everywhere? We kind of free people and whip industry on them so that they can have all the benefits of industry that we have come to love.
There's something nobler they could do to be helping this planet heal? You don't.
Mother Earth, raped again. Guess who? Hey, she was asking for it.
By the way, there's another bunch of homeless coming soon when the housing bubble bursts and the dollar gets devalued. We'll get a lot of middle-class homeless.
I said a long time ago, when fascism comes to America, it won't wear jackboots and brown shirts. It'll have on a smiley face and a T-shirt and designer jeans and Nikes.
You know what they ought to do? They ought to have two new requirements for being on the police. Intelligence and decency. Never can tell. It might just work. It certainly hasn't been tried yet. That's all you ever hear about in this country is our differences. Race, religion, sexuality. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. Anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank.
But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At
all.
The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. Land of the free, home of the brave. All men are equal. Justice is blind. The good guys win. And everything is going to be just fine. It's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
You see what I mean, folks? Everything we talk about on that on the show is in there. George Carlin was going through a transformation of sorts, and you'll see that if you watch the documentary. And he was tired of playing the company line. And that's when he took off the suit and tie and put on the blue jeans and T-shirt and let his hair grow out and grew the beard and became the George Carlin that we all know. And he was a philosopher, folks. I mean, that garbage in, garbage out statement that he made, that was the stinking thinking that C.S. Lewis was talking about from secular humanism. And that little blurb you heard on there, Machine Gun Bacon, that was Ted Cruz on a shooting range where he fired a semi-automatic over and over and over until he heated the barrel up so much that he cooked the bacon that he had wrapped around the barrel. Very sophomoric. Very stupid, appealing to the dumbed-down masses. And then that comment he made about our foreign policy, freeing people to give them industry. You know, that's right out of John Perkins and the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I'm telling you, George Carlin was very well-read, tried to share this in a humorous way. And he was firing on all cylinders. A lot of that clip was taken from his 19th album and his 14th and final HBO stand-up comedy special titled It's Bad for Ya. And you can get it out on HBO. You can probably find it online. It was televised first on March 1st, 2008, less than 4 months before he died of heart failure. But, you know, we just have to recognize that the entire system is in an engineered shutdown by design. This isn't all accidental, folks. This is by design, and the people on the very top know it. Now, I have one other clip I'd like to play in this segment, and it's Klaus Schwab at the recent Davos. In fact, I think it still may be going on. It is over in Davos, Switzerland, and it's Klaus Schwab talking about the future. Future is built by us. It's a 1 minute and 3 second clip. Listen to the audacity of this man and think about what I read to you from C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world. But two conditions are necessary. The first one is that we act all as stakeholders of larger communities, that we serve not our only self-interests, but we serve the community. That's what we call stakeholder responsibility. And second, that we collaborate. And this is the reason why you find many opportunities here during the meeting to engage into very action and impact-oriented initiatives to make progress related to specific issues on the global agenda.
So here you heard it, folks, the evil James Bond villain himself, Klaus Schwab, in his opening address to the current Davos meeting there in Switzerland at the WEF. The future is built by us. What this guy doesn't understand, folks, is that soon he's going to be relegated to the dustbin of history. Just like all dictatorships, this one will end up imploding, either on its own or upon the return of Jesus Christ. Now, if this is the final beast dictatorship, which is part of the end time scenario and not some engineered scam by these globalists, it will be crushed by the literal return of Jesus Christ, the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. Praise his name, folks. Now, before we move on, Jack Posobiec was detained by the World Economic Forum's private security thugs while he was trying to cover the Davos summit. You know, this kind of replaced the Bilderbergs. But before Davos became vogue, it was the Bilderberg. But anyways, people used to cover that and then get detained and get arrested. So he traveled to Davos to cover the World Economic Summit. He was reporting back for Human Events and Turning Point USA. And he also does some work for the War Room with Steve Bannon. He's a former Navy intelligence officer turned conservative journalist, and he was detained, and that's what we're going to play in this next clip. And he was searched along with his entire film crew. And this detention took place while the film crew was trying to take a break and have dinner and recharge their batteries at a local restaurant. So Ari Hoffman did an interview on his show with Jack Posobiec and his detention by the World Economic Forum police force. And what I'd like to do is play Hoffman's interview, about 10 minutes, that I think is worth listening to. Here's Ari Hoffman interviewing Jack Posobiec about his recent detention by the Davos Goon Squad at the 2022 World Economic Forum Summit.
Welcome back to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Remember, if you missed any part of the show, you can always get the podcast at Google, Apple, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Remember, while you're there, to rate, subscribe, and share, so that way you never miss a minute of the show. Human Events Daily host Jack Posobiec was detained in Davos, Switzerland yesterday on the first day of the World Economic Forum's annual convention. The story is absolutely mind-boggling. Joining us now from Switzerland to discuss is Jack Posobiec. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Ari. Thanks so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure. So walk me through exactly what happened. I watched the video, but some other people haven't seen it. Tell us what happens.
Right. So, you know, we're over here covering Davos, covering the World Economic Forum, and Turning Point USA. So we run my podcast, Human Events Daily. We run that through Turning Point Live. And Charlie and the folks at Turning Point are putting together a Great Reset program now to really expose the whole thing and come up with a conservative response for it. So on one hand, he sent me to Davos, to the World Economic Forum, to put together what is essentially going to be a docu-series called The Great Global Reset. And we're going to talk about the economic side. We're going to the WHO down in Geneva tomorrow, and that's going to cover the medical side. So this pandemic treaty, international health regulations, IHRs, right, all that. And then Charlie's got the book up at tpusa.com on the conservative response to The Great Reset. So that's the two sides. We got the series. He's got the book at tpusa.com. And we're in the middle of filming. We've been spending the whole afternoon getting shots, doing stand-ups, doing some live hits while we're out here. And then We've sat down. We're at a restaurant. The crew's getting some food. I'm getting something to drink. We're planning our next move. We're charging the equipment, right? You know, with the with our extension cords and adapters for the Swiss outlets. And we had, about an hour prior, some plainclothes officers had come up to us and said, "Hey, we wanted to check your guys' IDs and check your press credentials." I said, "Sure, no big deal. Here you go. Here's our press credentials. Here's our passports. You know, feel free to check them out and look them up," right? So they went and did that and went about their way. Those are plainclothes. As we're sitting down, about an hour later, two minivans roll up with a quick response force of fully armed officers that pop out with MP5 semi-automatic rifles. And essentially one of them, it was like he was flagging me, putting his barrel across my body, basically, where, you know, if it was negligent discharge or something, could have struck me. And they said that we were being detained, and they said that they needed to question us, and that we were not allowed to leave.
So let me play devil's advocate for 2 seconds here. This group that you met beforehand of police officers, do you think they called them and said, "Hey, we got these guys here, come check them out"? Do you think somebody saw you guys standing around and said, "Come check these guys out"? Did they seem to know who you were before they already showed up, which would indicate it was the police who called them to check out you guys?
Well, we weren't sure at first, but then later on during the detention, that same plainclothes officer did appear and was talking to the officers who were there. So they were clearly working together at some level. And these guys, by the way, I should mention, had badges on their shoulders that said World Economic Forum Police on them. World Economic Forum Police.
So they're not even the normal Swiss police. They're there to safeguard the event. And if an hour went by, that probably means somebody did their due diligence into why you guys were there and was concerned about your motives. Were there any Swiss laws? Because their laws on freedom of speech and freedom of press are not the same as the U.S. Were there any Swiss laws they claim you guys violated that they were looking into?
Not at all. Not even in the least. They came to us and they said, we need to check you guys out. We need to check out your equipment. So the first thing they did was take us one by one around the corner of the building and frisked us, hands and pants, front and back, your sleeves, your pant legs, everything, going into our bags, checking all the equipment. They took a guy over to the van. They were checking out the van we had rented, for just, you know, the equipment van. Nothing in there other than a film crew and film equipment, right? So then the detective shows up, and she starts asking us why we were filming. I said, "Well, we're here with Turning Point USA. They're a nonprofit, fully registered in the U.S., extremely well-known. You can go to tpusa.com. You can find out everything you want to about them. Mm-hmm. Happy to join if you're, you know, you're interested," right? And, yeah, I know, right? And Charlie probably would be happy if I hit them up for some donations and get some Swiss chocolate down at down in Tampa for when we hold SAS later this summer. Well, you know, she's asking us all these questions, trying to see if she can get us to change up our story, to see if our story checks out. And it's so confusing to me that she's focusing on a couple of guys. And look, you know, I'm dressed like a reporter. I'm talking into a camera. It's pretty obvious what I'm doing out there. But so I can only surmise that what happened was, in between the first interaction with the police and the second, they came up and accosted us not because of what we were doing, which was completely normal stand up in front of a major event. It's not because of what we're doing, Ari. It's because of who we were and why we were there.
So then that leads into, what are they doing at the World Economic Forum? I mean, are we talking about the U.S. signing this treaty to be part of the WHO, because that's more a U.N. thing? Are we talking about the New World Order? What are they focused on when they fly on their private jets out to Davos, Switzerland, aside from talking about climate change?
Well, Klaus Schwab said it in his opening statement. He said, this is the global shapers community. This is the community that he views as the global shapers. And he also put a missive out to anybody who might have a contrary or critical view of the World Economic Forum. He said, there is a fringe who try to use the World Economic Forum's brand for their own intentions, and they should remain the fringe. Meanwhile, I'm looking at this saying, well, you guys are the 1% of the 1%. If anything, We're not the fringe. We're the vast majority who's trying to understand why you people are coming in here, making decisions for the rest of everybody else. Bill Gates is on the stage today, by the way, talking about the next pandemic and what the plans are that are going to be rolled out for the next pandemic. I'm not even sure why this guy is in charge of pandemics. I mean, he's not a doctor. He's not a scientist. And yet he seems to have this incredible amount of influence. And it's the same way. Who is Klaus Schwab? What exactly is his background? He was a professor. He founded this thing back in the 70s, right? They have no credentials. They've never been elected. We have no idea what these bodies are or why they have so much control over us, over our lives, and over our families. And yet, for some reason, the world elite listen to them, and they have influence both here at the WEF, which is a private organization, and then also at the WHO, which is also a private organization.
In the last few minutes, we have with Jack Sobiech, who is the host of Human Events Daily. I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, what's their end game here? They just want the peons to be whatever they are. Do they let you come in and film their speeches? Have they restricted you in any way of going in there to hear what they're actually talking about?
Well, the speeches themselves are live streamed, but the way it's set up is that they have these different exhibitions outside the speech hall called houses. So there's a metaverse house. There's a Ukraine house. There's a Russia war crimes house. There's a blockchain house, right? All, and the people who are visiting those, it's called, you're walking up and down what's called Promenade Street. And so we had been walking up and down the street, collecting footage, going to different places, seeing, you know, experiencing what was going on. And, you know, weren't accosting anybody. It wasn't confronting anybody. It wasn't doing the James O'Keefe thing where we're chasing people down the street. Wasn't doing anything like that. Not that I have anything against it. And just being completely above board. And yet they still saw the reason, after taking that hour to look up who we were, they came back again and detained us. This is why, Ari, the First Amendment that protects freedom of speech, and we just took down Nina Yankovic last week. The Washington Post credited me with knocking down the Disinformation Governance Board. And then number two, freedom of the press. We do not have those. You do not have those things outside of the confines of the United States without the jurisdiction of the U.S. Constitution. This shows right there what happens in a country where you do not have those legal protections.
And Jack, we really appreciate you bringing the attention to what was going on with Nina Jankowicz and all that insanity over at the Ministry of Truth. Thank you for fighting for us, for our freedom of speech, our freedom of press, our freedom of posting whatever we want on social media. And thank you for keeping us informed of what's going on at the World Economic Forum. We really do appreciate it.
God bless, Ari. I appreciate it. So the docuseries will be out once we're done shooting at the Great Global Reset. And right now, you can go to tpusa.com and download, or excuse me, you put in a donation, and then you get a copy of the new book, The Conservative Response to the Great Reset.
We're going to make sure to have you guys back on as soon as that thing comes out, because we would love to see it. We'd love to give you guys as much PR as we can. We love everything you guys do over at Human Events and Turning Point USA. Jack Sobiech, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep up the great work.
Take care. All right, back at you.
We got a whole lot more to discuss as the show rolls along. You're listening to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVA.
Two good resources there, Ari Hoffman. You can check him out online, and Turning Point USA. Make sure you check out the work that Jack's putting together from this visit over to Davos. So he mentioned this badge that these cops were wearing. And Israel365news.com reported this week that the World Economic Forum has its own police force whose badges resemble Daniel's end days prophecy. And this is from Daniel 8, verse 5. As I looked on, a he-goat came from the west, passing over the entire earth without touching the ground. The goat had a conspicuous horn on its forehead. And here in this badge, you see two of these goats on a side view ready to ram each other. It's very ominous, folks. So you have to wonder, are they trying to do a deep fake on us, or is this literally the end times? And is Jesus about to return? Now, before I move on, there's one more highly suspicious thing that happened, and that's the Texas school shooting. And it's starting to remind me of something that my mentor, William Cooper, actually wrote in his book, Behold a Pale Horse, where he referred to a CIA project named Orion. And I'd like to read a quote out of Behold a Pale Horse 12, The Secret Government, page 225. The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for criminals to use. This tended to foster a feeling of insecurity, which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms, using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion. The CIA inculcated the desires of these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and so far is working perfectly. The middle class will be begging the government to do away with the Second Amendment. Did you hear that, folks? That's exactly what's happening. You know, this entire tragedy that happened down in Texas is highly suspect. You know, this gunman, I forgot his name, he was actually standing outside the school for 12 minutes shooting across the street to another facility, and I forget what it was, the Jewish Center or something, I forget what it was. He was literally shooting for 12 minutes out there, literally in the heart of the town, and there was no police response. Then he jumps over the fence, he starts shooting outside the school for a while, and he goes in a conveniently unlocked side door. Now, here's where the story gets really creepy. Between 45 to 60 minutes lapsed, police armed with flak jackets, you know, bulletproof vests, high-capacity firearms, stood detaining people that tried to go in. Parents who tried to go in to rescue their children were knocked to the ground, beaten, handcuffed, pepper sprayed, detained. One woman actually convinced them to take the cuffs off. She jumped the fence, ran in, and rescued her two children. While these officers stood there and were assembling for about 15 minutes, for a total of 45 to 60 minutes of inactivity as this killer was inside the building shooting people. Does that sound suspicious to you? There needs to be a full investigation of this. And they said they were waiting for backup. Well, remember, this was a lone gunman. These are highly trained professionals with semi and automatic weapons. I'm sure they understand how to lay down crossfire, how to do various tactical maneuvers. Yet they waited. Folks, that's screaming conspiracy. And that makes me think of what William Cooper talked about with Project Orion from the CIA. There's a clip out there of one woman heard yelling, "Shoot him," or something, and a man could be heard saying, "They're all just effing parked outside, dude. They need to go in there." And the AP even reported this, that the police had set up a perimeter around the building while the shooter was actively massacring these people inside the building. You know, so many in Christendom see this insanity all around us. They really do, folks. And I think all will admit that Jesus must be coming back soon. But is this a deep fake or is this really the end times? While all Christians believe that Jesus will return, that's about where the agreement ends, like I said at the beginning of the show, and the confusion begins. And most of the confusion surrounds his 1,000-year rule and reign here on earth, and the tribulation, and this very contentious topic of the rapture. Now, the amillennialists, they deny any future earthly rule by Jesus, whereas the premillennialists say he returns before the millennium, and the postmillennialists say, well, Jesus returns after the millennium. So what I'd like to do now, folks, provided the Lord's willing, is I'd like to dive in to what the Bible has to say about the millennium, the rapture, and the tribulation. Now, just last week at church, our pastor, his name's Todd, he's a really cool guy, he shared this information, and it came from J. Warner Wallace's, you know, he's the cold case guy who wrote the book A Person of Interest. Well, he wrote an article back on January 21st, 2021, titled, "What Does the Bible Say About the End Times? Three Historic Perspectives." Now, like I said, although all Christians, and that includes all Christians, believe that Jesus will return, and there's a few other things that most Christians will agree upon. His return, his judgment upon the living and the dead, and the fact that he was here on earth about 2,000 years ago. That's about all that the believers in the world can agree upon. But that's enough, okay? That's enough. And we should all stand on that. So the info I'm covering today isn't supposed to be used for arguments. And you shouldn't, you say, pack this up in your pocket like ammo and then fire it at all your other contrary-thinking Christian friends. No, don't do that. This isn't about argument. This is about distinction. And I do think there is a right way to think through this, and that's what I'd like to try to share with you today. So with all this turmoil in the world today, knowing that Jesus returns to rule the living and the dead, so to speak, ought to give us peace. And there are three things I want to cover that will help you build your peace. One is knowing about the millennium. One is knowing about the tribulation. And the third is knowing about the rapture. So the millennium is alluded to in several places in the Bible. And I think you can see it most clearly in Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 4, where John wrote, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more." Isn't that what's happening right now with the World Economic Forum and everything else and all the stinking thinking of Yuval Noah Harari and his situational ethic and his secular humanism? But back to the scriptures. "And cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should receive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he may be loosed a little season. And I saw thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast and neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands." Now listen to this last part of verse 4. "And they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So there's the key verse for this whole concept of the millennium. It's taken from verse 4 of Revelation chapter 20. "And they," that's us, you and me, folks who believe, "lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Now some good Christians don't see this as proof of the millennium.
Really?
Yeah, Elvin, really. And that baffles me too. I can't understand it. It's right there in black ink on white paper, that people don't see it. I just don't know how they don't see it. You know, some people say, well, Revelation is merely symbolic. Well, you know, they talked about the great dragon there. Then he went on to define that it was the dragon was Satan. That's not symbology, not symbolic. Satan's not symbolic. That's who the dragon or the old serpent represented. So I would call that literary license. I wouldn't call that symbology. So there are these people out there that say that this is all symbolic or apocalyptic, but not literal. And then on the other side of the spectrum are people like me who view it as literal. Now, there are three with regard to the millennium. There are those who are the post-millennialists. Now, they believe that Jesus returns after the millennium. And they say that the church is going to bring on the millennium by creating a good and wonderful and happy world. They say the world's just going to get better and better and better. And... Hey, I said no laughing here. This is the serious part. Whoa, come on, folks. No laughing. But it is kind of funny, isn't it? How are we doing in making the world better and better and better? So I just say, hey, post-millennialists, look around. Then we have the amillennialists. I've talked about them. They say it's all literal, not symbolic. And they point back to events that happened in 70 AD as it actually being a fulfillment of this. And this includes Reformed-type beliefs and confessions, the Presbyterians, some of the higher order churches like the Church of England, the Roman Catholics. And they even believe that the church replaces Israel. But then how do they reconcile Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, where St. John wrote, "And they," that's reigned with Christ 1,000 years. And then there's people like me, we're known as the premillennialists. We believe that Jesus returns and then the millennium happens and we rule and reign with him for 1,000 years. And some of the confessions include the Southern Baptists, the Assembly of God, and like I said, myself. And by the way, my Bible teacher, Pastor Adrian Rogers, he was a premillennialist. So the entire body of believers are encompassed in these three groups concerning the millennium. But I'm telling you that the amillennialists and the posts, they ignore the scriptures that teach that the church is distinct from the nation Israel and that we will live and reign with Christ 1,000 years. So I think it's best to embrace this premillennialism. And when you do, other passages become more literal, like the rapture, passages on the rapture and passages on the trib. Now, just a quick comment on the rapture. That word itself is not in the Bible, but neither is Trinity, neither is missions work, although we're told to do missions work, and we're told that our God is a triune God, one God with three personas or three personalities. So other scriptures that allude to the rapture or tribulation. But, you know, before I do, let's get back and think about that a little bit more. So that word isn't in the Bible, but the word raptoro is pulling out, the plucking away. That's where it comes from. It's in the Bible. It just isn't that word, you know. So when you start to take this premillennialist view, other scriptures like Romans chapter 9 through 11 just come alive prophetically, and so does the book of Revelation. You know, they all do. And they distinguish the church from Israel. They make it very clear what's going on. And then, of course, Daniel chapter 9 that we covered a few weeks ago, the 70th week, that comes alive in Jeremiah 30 with, you know, Jacob's trouble. So why would God give us all of these scriptures and not really mean it? That's a question out there for the amillennialists and the postmillennialists. So now we've looked at the millennial issue. We've looked very briefly at the rapture issue, and I've covered that in great detail on many other episodes, so I'm not going to do that here. Let's wrap this up by looking at the tribulation. And there's three views on that. Pre, mid, and this one, folks, is still up in the air for me. I've taken stances on all three. I've tried to argue for all three. I've tried to embrace all three. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just say his timing is perfect, and he'll be back at exactly the right moment. But let's just look at what the three views have. Pre-tribulation, and they stand very heavy on the letter, the first letter that Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. And for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, and the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. And then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds, to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. So this concept here, caught up, it's in verse 17, is the Greek word harpazo, which means to be caught up or raptured. And that's what I was referring to, the fact that when you embrace a premillennial view, all these other scriptures start to come alive with regard to the tribulation and the rapture. And then think about the other things historically that have happened. 1940, Israel reestablished as a nation. 1970, they annexed Jerusalem and returned Jerusalem to the nation Israel. And then we've got all the makings of the Antichrist and the mark of the beast. Now, this is all in the Bible, and we're seeing the signs of the time, but we know this for certain, because some of this could be speculation. We know this for certain, and Jesus said it in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 14. And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, and see that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in diverse places. And these are the beginning of sorrows. And then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted. That's tribulation, folks. And shall kill you. And ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And right here, folks, as Jesus is talking about this, I'm thinking, you know, tribulation could be, the rapture could be happening mid-trib, before the wrath of God is poured out. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. And he shall endure unto the end, and the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all the nations, and then shall the end come. So this gospel of the kingdom, they'll be preached in all the world for a while. Well, here Jesus is telling us three things. He first said that no one leads you astray. Now, how are you going to do that? Well, read your Bibles. Walk in the faith, folks, by knowledge and practice. Get to know God. The Holy Spirit will guide you, folks. Be engaged in what Jesus told you to do, and that's to share the gospel. And don't be alarmed. That's a fear response. And fear is the opposite of faith. Fear is to Satan what faith is to Jesus. And then finally, let's all do the Great Commission. Now, he didn't command it in this passage, but he does in Matthew 28. And that commandment is that the gospel be proclaimed in all the world. That's not a command here, but a Great Commission. And I'm going to read that to you. Matthew 28, verses 16 through 20. Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee, into a mountain where Jesus had appointed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, all power is given to me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whosoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. So, folks, to wrap this up on a positive note, we know that the world is in chaos. We know that this is either a deep fake, and I may get into that more next week, the whole concept of a deep fake. So let's consider the deep fake for next week, and let's consider a re-listen to Carlin, because there was a ton in there. Let's just see how that all unfolds. But anyways, in a positive note, as we wait for Jesus to return, and he will, let's take the Great Commission to heart. And if you'd like to get involved, there's a group known as the Alpha Group. And they have a Bible reading plan for new Christians. It's been translated into 112 languages and is available now in 160 countries. And it's run by a guy named, or I don't know if it's a guy or a gal, Nikki Gumbel. And they're out there saying in 2033, we'll have the 2000th anniversary of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Nikki's goal is for the entire world to have the scriptures available to them on this app that the Alpha Group put out. So there's one way you can get involved, folks. And I just encourage you to do that and to stay the course as we wait for the return of Jesus and to always stand upon the rock of truth and not these lies that are coming from this 1%. Encouraging you, folks, to never give in, never give in, no, never.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, that same spirit that rose Jesus from the grave, the high and holy spirit himself, lives in you and me when we confess Jesus as Lord. So, folks, I encourage you to lift your hands up with Jeremy Camp and just praise the Lord as we sing along with Jeremy, that same power.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior, while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word.
Power that can call the
cry out for change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus.